What does it mean to shine a light on her excellence? If she's not able to self-promote, how do we ensure that we are swarming her or any other person who is underrepresented so that they are seen in their excellence? So because of that, we were seeing shifts. We had the next version of the story to tell. And it was up to us. We had the data, we had the experience, and we had the roadmap to accelerate the advancement for women in leadership.
Welcome to the Seismic Shift Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about connection and disconnection at the highest levels. And we talk about what seismic shifts everyone is seeing. How can we best adapt as leaders? And today I am thrilled to introduce the one, the only, Jennifer McCollum, who has had quite a year. Y'all, it's incredible. When I met Jennifer, she was the badass CEO at Linkage, which is a SHRM organization, and it advanced women. And she's no longer, she left that position right parallel when she wrote her book, the bestseller, In Her Own Voice, Right Here. And then around that same time, she was just, I think maybe 10 days ago, just introduced as the new CEO of Catalyst, which is a nonprofit organization which also advances women and is all about equity and inclusion. So I've been following Jennifer. We're great friends and fans of one another and our work and just supporters of each other. So it's just been incredible, Jennifer, to see you already were at the top. That's what's wild about this. Let me try to find the language to describe Jennifer's meteoric rise. She was already at the top. And then just when you thought she couldn't get even further, then she releases the book, and then she takes over at Catalyst, and then she rings the bell of the New York Times Stock Exchange, and then she's on stage at a, you know, at a gala, and then she's speaking to 20,000 people about her book. Bravo, Jennifer McCollum, and welcome.
More, Michelle, more. I've never had this effusive of an introduction before. Thank you.
All I'm doing, Jennifer, is just shared with our listeners what has happened to you. I think that's really in the past 8 weeks.
it has been a lot. In fact, I'm just now writing about, you know, even change that I have masterminded. And we knew we were selling the company. I knew I was going to integrate it. I knew I was going to write a book. And I knew I'd find a new job. It's hard. And the, you know, you're seeing all of the beautiful things on social media. And it is. It's a beautiful thing. And it's hard.
I'm so glad you began with that. Because that is one, I've really enjoyed reading your book. And as a woman who's just a little bit older than you, I can really identify with all the hurdles that we've had to go through as women getting to the top of our fields. And I want to be really honest in this conversation. I remember when Sally Helgeson was on this podcast, and I asked her why she wrote her book, How Women Rise. And she said, because she gave a talk and she realized everybody who came to the talk were men. And it was for a big construction company, but she expected women. And the men all showed up and she said, I'm really surprised. And they said, we've got to figure out how to create positive environments where women can thrive. And so whether you're a man or a woman listening to this podcast today, I really want you to hear from a true global expert on how we do create environments where women can thrive. And I think the first thing is we just need to be honest. So yes, all the things that I've been seeing since I've seen you personally in Nashville before your book came out and we had this beautiful moment that we'll talk about in Nashville too, because a lot of that has to do with just being honest with imposter syndrome and oh my gosh. All the stuff that I have seen is so impressive. And just tell the listeners, it's got to be exhausting.
You know, I think exhaustion comes with challenge, comes with new experiences, comes with fear, comes with courage, right? And I don't necessarily think that's a gender thing. I think what is true about women, especially women leaders as they advance, is the challenges that we feel, and we call them hurdles, and they're well researched. And the book is really based on the foundational data and frameworks of Linkage. We've been tracking this for 25 years. It's just that much harder, and the hurdles are that much higher for women because we're so far behind when it comes to representation in leadership positions at all levels. So you mentioned imposter syndrome or confidence or our network or our inner critic or our clarity about what we want. All of that is a little bit harder, and that's what becomes exhausting.
Well said. And you know, since I met you when you were already a CEO, I do want you to share with your listeners, our listeners, I want you to share your story. Because you've been with Coca-Cola, with the Olympics. I mean, you've had an incredible career. Could you just share your story with our listeners of how you've gotten to the top?
I'm so glad you actually started at Coca-Cola. It is in the book, but I rarely talk about this. When I was in my 20s, I was traveling the world working on the Olympic Games and the World Cup, and Coca-Cola was my first real professional job, you know, in my 20s. And after about 5 years, by all accounts, I had the most amazing job in the world, and it wasn't feeding my soul. There was something about purpose, and I didn't even know what that meant yet, but I knew this wasn't my life destiny. I just didn't know what it was. And so slowly across the course of time, and Coca-Cola played a huge role in this, helped me shift my career as I discovered my purpose. And initially it was around helping leaders and teams and organizations fulfill their potential. So I was doing leadership development and coaching and organizational effectiveness, and I loved that work. Coca-Cola was my first client when I started my consulting firm. But then slowly over the course of years of managing leadership firms, leadership companies, leadership business units in publicly traded companies like Korn Ferry and the Corporate Executive Board, which was sold to Gartner, I started to get clearer and clearer about the specific role of women and gender and equity, because it was really hard for me as a professional woman rising up the ranks in the 90s, in the 2000s, when there just weren't many women at the top. So Linkage and now Catalyst represents really the last 6 years and probably the next 20 years, if I work that long, of my mission of helping to accelerate gender equity and inclusion in leadership at all levels, but really in the workforce writ large.
Oh, I loved hearing how you articulated your rise and your story. And you know what's crazy, Jennifer, is when I first started in academia, never thought that I would be a professor. I, like you, like we would have been best friends as soon as we first met. Because when I was coming out of my master's, all I wanted to do was leadership development. And I joined a consulting firm, which is how I got to New Orleans. And then I ended up becoming an academic, which I didn't think I would become, but the consulting firm ended up leaving New Orleans and I didn't want to leave. And so I took this academic job, and all of a sudden it was Publisher Parish and my mentor at the time. And I was so interested in advancing women causes and the gender differences and the way we communicate and creating cultures that will allow women to thrive. And the first thing they told me, they do not research women issues. It will not serve you well. How about that? So immediately they said, don't serve on the women's whatever. It was some curriculum and some committee, and don't publish on women. It will not serve you well. And so then I stopped doing it. Isn't that just sad? I mean, it's sad. I don't think I've ever told anybody that. That's sad. So thank you for taking the torch and carrying the torch all these years, because for a while, I guess, you know, people thought that it would hurt a career rather than advance a career.
Yeah. And I think, and look, you have found your way back. I mean, you are serving and supporting, you know, leaders across the spectrum of gender, but I know you have a special place for women leaders. You and I have talked about that. And I think it's the power of clarity and the power of intention. And again, women really struggle with this because they're concerned about serving the team, serving their family, and neglect oftentimes getting really clear about what they want and what success looks like for them, as opposed to, I'm just going to put my head down and work harder and harder and hope people notice. So back to this women thing, my clarity came kind of early on. I was doing pro bono work. I was doing visioning workshops for women on the side while I was a consultant, and even while I was a business unit leader, because it just gave me such joy. And I kept pursuing that. I have visioning documents of life prototypes back in 2006 to 2016, 10 years. I'm speaking, I'm writing, I'm consulting to support the advancement of women. I've got intellectual property. I've got products and solutions. I was visioning that before I even knew what or who Linkage was. So when the opportunity came to me, and that's a whole nother set of stories about how I reacted to it, but in reality, it was the intention I had set, you know, for 10 years. And it was the manifestation of that intention. And Catalyst is the natural extension of that. Look, I could have gone into M&A, you know, so I could have done a lot of things.
Yes, you totally. Yes, you could have gone into M. And that's what I want to learn too, also more about what you learned from Alan Mulally.
Yeah.
And with your credentials coming off of an incredible, I don't know if you want to call it a turnaround, but I mean, you were the executive in charge during the pandemic and used Alan Mulally's method of working together and love them up. And I want to learn more about that. And got them through an unstable time to a super stable time, and then transitioned without your next. And then somehow you were in the right place at the right time again to take over Catalyst. So I didn't know that about for years on the side pro bono, you would do all of the work with women. So it does make sense when you look back at your life's journey and leaning into your superpowers. This all makes sense.
So you've raised so many things that I'm dying to talk about, and this is your podcast, so I'm gonna let you guide.
I feel the same way. Like I just want to keep talking, and we will. And so I want to know, since this podcast is about seismic shifts, what was the seismic shift that prompted you? I have to get this book out there in her own voice. What prompted you to write the book?
Okay, that's so funny. And then we're going to go back to the Alan Mulally story. But I'm glad you grounded on the book, because first of all, the book, the purpose of the book is to support any woman at any level who aspires to advance, ideally in her career, but it could be any part of her life. And it's for any executive or organization, or frankly, any ally, man or woman, who wants to support her, right? So this book really is for everyone, but it's about the advancement of women specifically and how to support it. So seismic shift. What happened during the pandemic was such an awakening. So not only the impact on women, but also underrepresented populations, and the impact that we felt from not only the loss of jobs or having to opt out, either forcibly or because we couldn't manage our families and our lives, or for burnout. The impact on women was so significant that we started seeing in our data a couple things. One, what is shifting in terms of positive and negative about the experience for women in the workforce, but also what is shifting in terms of the expectations of leadership? And when you look at the evolving expectations of leadership through the pandemic, and when you start to really identify from a database perspective, which leaders were thriving and which ones were struggling, and you write about this. So it's that move away from any command and control. There was no one in control. We didn't have answers. So leaders who were able to express doubt, concern around uncertainty. I don't have the answers, but I want to figure out together how we can innovate our way forward. I'm going to be transparent about what I can. I'm going to be completely open, honest, vulnerable, inclusive, because the world has gotten too complex too quickly. And when you look at the data, women really thrive with those types of characteristics, especially during seismic shifts. So that was number one. But number two was things that we had made assumptions around as women, especially going into offices every day, how we speak, how we dress, how we act, how we assimilate and contort ourselves to the status quo. And this isn't a judgment. You know, it's very well researched that really only 26 to 28% of senior leaders all the way up to the C-suite are women. And when you get to CEOs, it's far worse. It's 10% or less in the Fortune 500, far worse for women of color. But what happened during the pandemic was we saw how, you know, all of a sudden it was exposed. We are all on screens. You see, I have children in the background. I've got family to manage. I've got the mental health of my family and my staff. The burnout is really significant, and we didn't have to hide that anymore. And so we started looking at the hurdles in a different way. You know, what does branding and presence mean when it comes to authenticity? What does confidence mean when we know we can't beat confidence into a woman any more than we can beat imposter syndrome out of a woman? But what does it mean to shine a light on her excellence? If she's not able to self-promote, how do we ensure that we are swarming her or any other person who is underrepresented so that they are seen in their excellence? So because of that, we were seeing shifts. We had the next version of the story to tell. And it was up to us. We had the data, we had the experience, and we had the roadmap to accelerate the advancement for women in leadership. And that's why we wrote the book.
Oh, that is beautiful. I mean, beautiful. And yes, yes, and yes. And for all of us listening, when we went through the pandemic together, the time that was so uncertain and crazy, and yet the silver lining was that we finally, I think, gave ourselves permission as men and women to show up authentically and to be real humans, and not to have to hide the most significant part of ourselves, which is if we're a part of a family. And not hide that we have children, not hide that we have dogs and spouses, and that we're every day, like, we're just like you, and the postman comes or the UPS man and makes all of my dogs go crazy. I mean, all of a sudden, we just didn't have to pretend we were just this professional without any other dimension in their lives. That's what, when I look back, it's crazy the expectations that we placed on each other without really questioning. We just did it because that's what success looked like. I remember in 2004 when I had my one and only child, and again, I was in academia, and I went to my boss secretly and said, I'm in a tenure track position and I really want to get tenure. Can I really get pregnant and have a kid? I don't see anybody doing it around me. I was one of the very few women, and I was the very first to have a baby in the College of Business. And she said, yeah, just don't tell anybody. And she said, if you can get pregnant in August, then you can deliver at the end of the spring semester because we don't have maternity leave. So then you can have the baby over the summer and then come back like nothing happened. And Jennifer, that is exactly what I did. And I didn't have maternity leave, and I worked all summer trying to pretend like I didn't just have a baby, and still ran an executive mentor program and came back acting like I didn't have a baby at home. And when I remember the reason why I brought this up again, because with you, I'm telling things that I've never, ever shared. I'm hoping this is a safe environment for all of us to talk about all of these hurdles and challenges. I remember then looking around saying, I don't think I have to change. I think the entire workplace has to change in order to make it okay to actually get pregnant, have a baby, and be a mom, because it just wasn't really welcomed or talked about. And that is what you're doing. I feel like you're giving us as women permission to talk about and to help men and to create environments where we can really thrive that are so much more inclusive than they were in the past.
Well, even you're talking about a couple really important things. One is the environment that we, especially as leaders in positions of power and influence, can create so that everyone can thrive, but especially those of us who haven't historically. But here's what's really interesting. Men want this too. Men want to be able to say, I'm a dad and I want to spend some time with my newborn or go see a soccer game. What I love about the McKinsey study that came out at the end of last year, when we looked at the benefit of COVID in this hybrid work environment and the flexibility that we were forced into, the unintended positive consequence was that women, and especially underrepresented women, suddenly became more ambitious. Because we saw possibilities that we had never seen before. Well, wait a minute. I can be a mom and an executive? No, I can go to the soccer game and work at night and finish my work projects when the commuting and the hiding and the pretending that we weren't mothers or parents was a little bit more the norm before COVID.
Absolutely. And pretend is the key word. I mean, again, I hope we all can look back from an anthropological perspective and say, what in the world were we thinking by pretending, having to make everybody pretend that they didn't have a life outside of work, right? So the pandemic, again, one of the silver linings is we came back and we disrupted work. What it means to show up at work, what it means to interact with work, what it means to be a leader at work, because all of a sudden the employees had more power than they've ever had before. And one of the things that I've seen also, which is different, because I feel like we're giving everybody permission, men and women, to show up as full humans, is this word love. And that goes back to Alan Mulally. When you and I were in Nashville and getting coached in that particular room by Alan, because Alan is your real mentor, yes. We were also privileged that day to learn about the Love 'Em Up and the Working Together methodology. And it occurred to me, Jennifer, that when Alan was leading the turnaround of Ford, the word love was absolutely not only not used in corporate America, but certainly not encouraged. And so can you kind of walk the listeners and kind of share the story in 2020, how you asked Alan to help you and what you learned from that?
Exactly. And I think Alan's been retired for, gosh, maybe 8 years now, but it's safe to say that he was well ahead of his time, which is probably why the turnaround stories of both Boeing and Ford, when he was leading through incredible crises, I won't go into too much detail about that, was so incredibly successful because what he calls his leadership practices and principles incorporated so many principles of inclusion. And this idea of love them up, whether it's your employees or your board or your manufacturing sites or your distributors, it's or the unions, love them up means we're all in this together. And what I love most about Alan is his generosity and care and ensuring that he calls it his working together leadership and management system to ensure that it carefully, his legacy is passing that on. So here's the story. I was in actually San Diego 2020, right before the shutdown. And again, I've seen Alan deliver this now, you know, in audiences with you and then with my teams probably 6 times now. I always learn something, but I was sitting in the front row watching him talk about this system, which is, you know, the value creation roadmap, the leadership practices and principles, your governance structure, your executive team, and the business plan review. So it's this beautiful system that all works together. And all I could think about was, I need that. The transformation of Linkage was going well. We were kind of 18 months in, but I was a little stuck. Like we didn't have full alignment. We weren't looking at the same metrics altogether. So I decided that I wanted to pull Alan into my network, but I wasn't sure how. And this represents two of the significant hurdles that women face. One is around how to activate a network. We're pretty good at curating, building relationships, but making that ask for the business, for the introduction, is harder for women, for the sale. And so I went to our friend Marshall Marshall Goldsmith, who runs this organization. And I said, hey, Marshall, do you think that Alan might help me implement the business plan review inside of Linkage? And I'll never forget. He looked right at me and he goes, I don't know. Why don't you ask him? So the next day, I was sweaty in my workout clothes. I was on East Coast time on the West Coast, and it was 6 or 7 in the morning. And I was reading voraciously all of Alan's articles, but I just needed him. I needed to meet him. So again, clarity and intention. I manifested Alan in the Hyatt Regency on the 17th floor at the Continental, you know, Breakfast Club, right? The like you go in and get the bad Continental breakfast. So Matt and Alan was just standing there at the toaster by himself. And I'll never forget, I was the inner critic shot straight up. I don't look good. I'm not dressed properly. I haven't thought about the right things to say. And again, you know, as a woman, especially, it was like, wait a minute. If not now, when? You need to bring him into your network, make the ask, and quiet that inner critic. So I walked right up to him. I asked him for a few minutes of his time at some point to help me implement the business plan review at Linkage. He offered me a few minutes of his time a couple weeks later, and that started the most magical mentoring relationship across the last several years that has completely changed my life, changed my company, and I committed to him I would never run another company without leveraging the Working Together management system.
Oh, that story just gave me chills. That's incredible, because you're in that story. You're absolutely right. You included so many of the hurdles that women face, and that internal critic and the imposter syndrome. But I don't look perfect, and I'm in workout, and it's 6 a.m. or whatever. But and also trying to use like, Marshall, could you enter? No, Marshall says, I don't know. Why don't you ask him? And the courage to lean in like you did is incredible. And look at how that has transformed your life. What a beautiful, beautiful person. Thank you for sharing that story. So much of the research that I do is on building a culture of connection. And when I wrote my book, which was only a year before you wrote your book, even though my book, The Seismic Shift in Leadership, is about the necessary characteristics needed to lead right now for men and women, what I learned is now's the time for women, because so much of what I uncovered of what's effective now is collaboration, not competition. True, genuine listening and empathy, going on listening tours, not just talking about yourself all the time, not leading with ego, leaning in with servant leadership, creating a positive, enthusiastic culture. Again, you know, the research has kept coming in. And so when I speak to women's groups, and I speak to a lot of women's groups, I say, now is our time. These are our superpowers that at least for me personally, Jennifer, I was told to suppress. That don't walk into the classroom that enthusiastic, seriously. That's not going to work. Or don't be that positive, right? Or that compassionate and kind. I had to tamper those natural characteristics of mine for years. And guess what, listeners? That did not work. I did not do well. I did not get good evaluations when I was trying to be somebody I wasn't. So I do believe that now is our time. So could you talk from your research, what it shows, what are the characteristics now that we have as women that we can lean into that really are our superpowers?
Well, I mean, you've named them all. And I want to just acknowledge that a lot of these come, and I'll go back to Linkage's work on what it is the most effective leaders do and what the most effective leadership is. And Linkage has a model. I'm not going to go too deep into it. It's called purposeful leadership. And it's a model that's like, look, we commit to certain things to our stakeholders. They expect these things of us. One is inspire, one is engage, one is innovate, and one is achieve. And I can go deeper in those, except I want to focus on that middle one, which is called become. And that's the center and the core of becoming a better leader through commitment, self-awareness, courage, and this understanding that we continue to evolve into more beautiful and better versions of ourselves. Now, let me piece this about for gender specifically. When we look at all of the commitments, there's five, and all of the practices that underlie those, and we look at the data, and we do this through 360 assessments, women believe that in most cases, we score ourselves as equal, sometimes even lower than the men. But all of our raters, men and women, when it comes to direct reports, peers, managers, score women more highly on almost every single commitment and practice. That doesn't mean men are bad leaders. It means that women are so well positioned and poised to lead. Now, we talked about what some might perceive as kind of the warm and squishy side of leadership. Really important. My least favorite term is soft skills. And yes, women are fabulous at those, but those are actually core business skills to create an environment where everybody feels like they're included. So I want to end, but just to continue the story, I start the book. You talked about all this, the lovely sides that are typically female characteristics that you tried to hide and it didn't work. I actually was the opposite. I had this innate, I don't know why, competitive, aggressive, assertive. I just love to compete and I love to win, right? And I was called a cupcake with a razor blade inside. So, and early in my career. And so you described the cupcake, and I had that too. You know, I could be warm and collaborative and kind. And but that razor blade side is what men are celebrated for and women are vilified for. And so my work in the world is, it's not about the cupcake or the razor blade. When you look at the entire spectrum, sometimes we have to be the razor blade, right? We have to make really difficult decisions to compete effectively in the environment. And we have to create an environment where we're not doing it alone. We're bringing people with us. But that's not only women. Men need to be the cupcake and the razor blade as well. And so that's a lot of the work I'm doing is, guys, we need to integrate what it means to be an effective leader. And guys could be more of the cupcake too.
I love that. And can we just go ahead and make a commitment and try to create a movement right now, Jennifer, with everyone who's listening, is to stop calling them soft skills.
Yes.
They're as you said, they're business skills. I call them power skills.
Oh, I love that.
They're power skills. But to be honest with you, I think it's more realistic to go with what you were saying. They're business skills. Is that how you said the soft skills are not soft? They're business.
Yeah. And that's where, I mean, just full circle back to Alan. When I watch Alan engage with anyone, like any level, any gender, you know, any race, intersect it any way, he is always this combination of this incredible cupcake. You just are drawn to him. But when
he's a cupcake, you're so right.
But I mean, I'll give you an example. He just gave me some really good advice as I take on this new role as the CEO of Catalyst. And I'm not going to tell you what the advice was, but that was a serious razor blade coming out. And again, I don't want to, it sounds negative, but it was like, Jennifer, this is what I am going to assume is going to happen. Given your board, you know, given the, given the elevated brand that you're working toward, everyone is going to come for you. And let me offer you some advice on listen, smile, nod, engage, and then invite all of them to take a step back, because you're going to know what needs to happen and trust that. And he was really giving me some solid, like, all those consultants, all those partners, all those vendors, you figure it out.
Incredible. You are so, again, I was going to say, you're so fortunate to have Alan Mulally as your official mentor, and it never would have happened unless you initiated and you made the ask and you had the courage to lean in. Well done. That is transformative, both professionally and personally. And so he's telling you to listen to your gut, but also be aware people are going to come after you. You're at such a high level and such a huge platform and on stage. And what does Brené Brown talk about? The man in the arena, you know, the person in the arena. You are in the arena.
But
you have the...
I want to brag on you for 1 second in closing, and I don't know if we have another minute, but why am I able to stand in the arena? And you are too, by the way. But because I have Alan, and because I have Marshall, and because I have exceptional network that I know has my back and supporting me. So the last story I'm going to tell, Michelle, is about you. And I will never forget this as long as I live. It almost brings me to tears every time. I had a lot of imposter syndrome about being a first-time author. My inner critic was really heightened. Like, I'm a CEO, I'm a mom, I'm all these things. I am not an author. And I showed up at that meeting in Nashville, and we saw each other live, and I was dragging this big box of like promotional materials on the book, and I shoved them in a corner under a piano, and I was afraid to bring them out. But I was kind of whispering to people that I trusted and respected, like you. And I said, yeah, I've got some, you know, I'm launching this book, and, you know, it's way over there in the corner, but maybe like later I can give you one. And you grabbed me, and I'm not going to give you the exact quote because it was an expletive, but you go, how's anybody going to find about the books if they are in the corner? Get over there, give me those books. I'm going to pass them out for you. And that, you know, they were promotional pre-order material. And if you wouldn't have done that, those books would still be sitting under the piano.
Well, I tell you what, thank you so much for sharing that story. That was a really special moment with us. And I did curse at you. I said, seriously, Jennifer, let's get out. I'm going to do this. This is important. I know it's uncomfortable. I had just gone through it myself. That's the most uncomfortable part of writing a book. It's not writing the book. It's promoting the book and having to get out there and asking for help. It's really uncomfortable. I had lived that, and I wanted to support you, and I wanted you to shine. And one of the things I've learned about all of this is we do rise together. We do things better together. We lift each other up. And it is so important to have that network of people that you can trust. And you are certainly in that circle. Thank you, Jennifer McCollum. You are such a rock star. I literally could talk nonstop for another 30 minutes about everything that you're talking about and advancing for women and inclusion and equity. Thank you for your leadership. And thank you to all the listeners who have tuned in today. Jennifer, do you want to just leave them with one piece of advice, kind of a call to action for everyone listening?
Find your purpose and the clarity on how you are going to achieve it in the world, and share it loudly with everyone. With you, Michelle, it was, I am an author, and I want to be known as a thought leader and author. And then the world and the universe conspires to help me get there, just like you did for me.
I tell you what, I mean, listeners, could you see why I've just been so excited all day? Jennifer McCollum is a true rock star. Thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom, your experience, your research, your hurdles, your success stories, your doubts, everything that you've had along the way. And thank you for advancing women. Thank you to all of our listeners and have a beautiful rest of your day. Take care. Thank you for joining us on The Seismic Shift. And before you go, can I ask one favor of you? Do you mind sharing today's episode with a leader you know? The power of this conversation is found in your using it and sharing it to create real connection in your life. Lastly, I'd like to thank Loyola University New Orleans and the Terra Firma audio team for helping bring this content to life.